Hi, this is Michael Bolton, Opera Philadelphia's Vice President of Community Programs, and thank you for joining me for this second podcast on Theodore Morrison and John Cox's Oscar, in which I will review the opera's plot. As I mentioned in the first podcast, this opera is part of Opera Philadelphia's American Repertoire Program, the company's commitment to producing one new American opera every season for a decade. This is the fourth work in that series, which has also included Nico Muhly and Stephen Karam's Dark Sisters, Kevin Putz and Mark Campbell's Silent Night, and Ricky Ian Gordon and Leonard Folia's A Coffin in Egypt. Future American Repertoire operas include Daniel Schneider and Bridget Wimberly's Charlie Parker's Yardbird, which comes this coming June, and Jennifer Higdon and Gene Shear's Cold Mountain next season. Oscar recounts the trial and incarceration of Oscar Wilde and is a co-commission and co-production with the Santa Fe Opera. It receives its East Coast premiere at the glorious Academy of Music in February for five performances only from February 6th through February 15th, 2015. And tickets are on sale now at operaphila.org or by calling 215-893-1018. The main characters in the opera are Oscar Wilde, sung by countertenor David Daniels, the British writer Ada Leverson, sung by Heidi Stober, the Irish editor and journalist Frank Harris, performed by William Burden, and as the American poet Walt Whitman, baritone Duane Croft. And finally, in the role of Alfred Lord Douglas, whom everyone calls Bosey, Wilde's lover, we have dancer Reed Luplau, and the dancer also plays a variety of roles throughout the opera as well. Now, you may be wondering about Walt Whitman. Walt Whitman actually plays a very pivotal role in the opera. Whitman and Wilde met in 1882 when Wilde was about 28 years old, and well before anyone knew who Oscar Wilde was, before he had made a name for himself. Wilde was in America on a national tour, having been hired by Gilbert and Sullivan's manager, Richard Doilycart, to promote Gilbert and Sullivan's operetta, Patience. And in an interview with the Philadelphia Press newspaper in January 1882, Wilde mentioned that he admired Walt Whitman and hoped to meet him while in America. Well, Whitman sent a note to Wilde's hotel. Wilde visited the partially paralyzed Walt Whitman's row home on Stephen Street in Camden, New Jersey, as Wilde wanted to learn how to be famous from Whitman, who had become an international icon. We have this very rustic Whitman and this very debonair Wilde getting along famously during their meeting as they drank a bottle of Whitman's sister-in-law's homemade elderberry wine. A Philadelphian joked that it must have been hard for Wilde to swallow the homemade wine Whitman had offered, and Wilde rejected any sort of invitation to snobbery and said, "If it had been vinegar, I would have drunk it all the same. I have an admiration for that man which I can hardly express." Whitman died 10 years later in 1892, 3 years before the events in the opera take place. As the opera begins, we're in the St. James Theater in London after the world premiere of Wilde's great first comedy, Lady Windermere's Fan. The audience enthusiastically cries out, "Author, author," and Wilde appears in front of the curtain in white tie, tails, and a green carnation. It's a brief but telling moment. A new kind of celebrity, a wickedly brilliant personality, is before us. And Wilde says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I deeply appreciate your attending this first performance of Lady Windermere's Fan. I, like you, have enjoyed this evening immensely. I congratulate you on the great success of your performance, which persuades me to think you think almost as highly of the play as I do myself. Together we have borne witness to an immortal occasion. Thank you." As soon as Oscar exits, the curtain rises on a splendid library which acts as a literary pantheon of immortality. We see Walt Whitman, one of the great immortals, waiting to address us. He's carrying a copy of Leaves of Grass, which he opens to its first page and reads, "Come, said my soul, such verses for my body let us write, for we are one." He continues telling us that he's passed on, sitting in the hall of immortality, and he shares how he met Oscar Wilde and the events that have happened since the glorious premiere of Lady Windermere's Fan, specifically the importance of being earnest, Wilde's love affair with Bosie, and the beginning of Wilde's downfall. Wilde has been publicly accused of being a sodomite, a charge punishable by imprisonment by Bosie's father. Walt leaves, and we see Oscar Wilde as another of the great immortals. He addresses his audience outside of time and sings, "Sorrow is that mode of existence in which body and soul are one and indivisible." A quote from Wilde's De Profundis, one of the many direct quotes by Wilde throughout the opera. He's fallen very far from the celebrations of that opening night of Lady Windermere's Fan. On the eve of the verdict of his final trial, Wilde approaches hotel after hotel trying to find lodging, even from hotels he's frequented before. Bosie's father, the Marquess of Queensberry, has bribed two detectives who taunt him with cries of sodomite and queer, and they warn hotel managers against giving him a room. Unable to find a room, Bosie eventually finds shelter with the writer Ada Leveson, a very close friend of Wilde's, whom he's nicknamed Sphinx. She puts him up in the child's nursery, and he jokes there about his situation, begging for a drink of absinthe. He tells a story about a hallucination he had while drinking absinthe. A waiter made flowers appear after watering sawdust, and the events are reenacted in his mind, and in the waiter, he sees his beloved Bosie. Bosie takes Oscar by the hand and draws him into a dance, and a waltz begins with the two in an intimate, gentle style. And as the intensity of the music increases, Oscar stops dancing, and Bosie continues to dance along athletically as Oscar watches, dazzled. Coming back to reality, Oscar and Ada are soon joined by their friend, Frank Harris. Drinks are served, and a playful repartee prevails, and Frank reveals that he has made arrangements for Oscar to abscond jail and flee the country. Oscar could escape the inevitable guilty verdict. Oscar tells his friends that his mother has said to him, "If you stay, even if you go to prison, you will always be my son. It will make no difference to my affection. But if you go, I will never speak to you again." Oscar agonizes over his decision and dreaming of what life with Bosie could be. The fantasy dissolves, and Oscar chooses to stay. The only honorable course is to face his accusers. In what essentially becomes a show trial, the nursery explodes into a mockery of the Old Bailey, and the toys enact the proceedings as farce. The judge suddenly pops up as a jack-in-the-box clown. The jury, costumed as toys, puppets, and dolls, scamper onto the stage one by one. The verdict is handed down quickly, and Justice Wills declares, "Oscar Wilde, the crime of which you have been convicted is so bad that one has to put stern restraint upon oneself to avoid one's describing in language which I would rather not use. This is the worst case I have ever tried." Oscar Wilde is found guilty, sentenced to hard labor for 2 years, as Act One ends. Act Two begins inside Reading Jail. Walt Whitman appears, and reminding us of Leaves of Grass, says, "Enough to break both body and soul." Oscar is brought into the prison and greeted with jeers from the inmates. He removes his elegant attire and changes into his prison uniform. A reality check is brutally provided by the sadistic Governor Isaacson, whose personal mission is to punish his charges to the furthest extreme, and Oscar will be no exception. He will have nothing to read, no paper on which to write. He will never speak to another prisoner. He will be allowed 2 visitors every 3 months and allowed to write 1 letter and receive 1 letter every 3 months. He is rapidly broken in body and soul by the prison regime as the prisoners sing stanzas from Wilde's The Ballad of Reading Jail. "The brackish water that we drink creeps with loathsome slime, and the bitter bread they weigh in scales is full of chalk and lime." Wilde is assigned to wheel a crank 10,000 times a day. A dial records his efforts, and the jailer mocks it should only take 6 hours to complete. It ruins Oscar, and he dreams of Bosie and says, "But for my pity and affection for you, I would not now be weeping in this terrible place." Months later, the prisoners are brought into the chapel, and in his feverish weakness, Wilde suffers a fall during the service and injures his head and ear and is sent to the infirmary. There, he's able to talk to other prisoners, discovering levels of simple humanity that restore his spirits. And he realizes that there are greater degrees of suffering in life than he has ever imagined. We learn that there's to be an execution the following day, and during the night, the tension inside the prison reaches a terrifying pitch as all feel the presence of death, who offers a Totentanz, a dance of death. And when death removes his mask and reveals his identity to Oscar, it's Bosie. Walt Whitman appears, and he, Oscar, and the prisoners sing portions of the Ballad of Reading Jail. At 6 o'clock, we cleaned our cells. At 7, all was still. But the suff and swing of a mighty wing the prison seemed to fill, for the Lord of Death, with icy breath, had entered in to kill. Nearing the end of his sentence, Oscar is visited by Frank Harris. Early release is beyond Frank's political influence, but at least the authorities have decided to replace the tyrannical Isaacson with a more moderate governor, who will allow Oscar writing materials, more books, and to work in the garden. Oscar confesses that prison life is an existence composed of foul degradations, terrible hardships, recurring monotony, sickening privations. Regarding my own punishment, he says, I have no bitterness, but I have learned pity, and that is worth learning. The thing I have to do is absorb all that has been done to me and to my companions and make it part of me. Having accepted it and perhaps growing wise from it, I will fight with my pen to change it for all the future victims of society's unjust laws. Perhaps I may be a better fellow after it all. At work in the garden, Oscar receives his last visitor. Ada Leverson comes to discuss plans for his return to freedom. And Ada says to him, "You, dear friend, were always a legend, and you always will be. We take you for a world's miracle, one of the immortals." Walt Whitman greets Oscar on the threshold of eternity and conducts him amidst general acclaim to his place among the immortals. Oscar stars countertenor David Daniels in the title role of Oscar Wilde, soprano Heidi Stober as Ada Leverson, tenor William Burden as Frank Harris, baritone Dwayne Croft as Walt Whitman, and dancer Reed Luplow as Bosie. The production is directed by Kevin Newberry, with choreography by John Curran, and Evan Rochester conducts. Opera Philadelphia's production of Theodore Morrison and John Cox's Oscar runs from February 6th through February 15th. For more information, visit us online at operaphila.org or on Facebook at Opera Phila. If you're attending the opera, please join me, Mike Bolton, for a free preview talk, Opera Overtures, 1 hour before every performance. And if you have any questions about this podcast, please email me at outreach@operaphila.org. This is Mike Bolton. Thanks again for listening to this podcast, and I hope to see you at the opera.